and welcome to SMPD, the show where we look back on the shows that shaped our childhood. I am Chris Bolton. With me, as always, my partner in podcasting, Mr. Mark Williams.
Hello.
And slight departure for us this episode, listeners. Not really looking at a TV show as such. We're looking at what is a series of movies, really. So this is, I guess, more akin to our kind of Christmas specials that we do around that time of year. We've decided to look back at the animated output of Asterix and Obelisk. Now, the reason for this is because Mark and I think we're both under the impression that this was an animated series, primarily because these things were fucking always on TV. Always. I had them on video as well, but I remember them always being on TV. Turns out it was just a series of animated films made over a span of about 20-odd years as well that were just constantly running on TV. So we figured, we put it on the list anyway, so let's look at it.
Yeah, because I think there was a sort of renaissance for the property around about 92, 93, because I remember being in junior school and this being every fucking where, and they were Happy Meal toys, and they were toys in Happy Meals. They were being shown all the fucking time as well, but the comics had a bit of a resurgence as well. So I remember these being fucking everywhere for quite a long time. And I think that possibly leads into it as well, that because of that, because the McDonald's, they always very quick to jump on stuff like that. So the fact that they were the Happy Meal toys for quite a while, that type of thing led me to think that actually, yeah, this might have been a thing from when we were kids, not realizing actually that as I said, it was a series of films from the late 60s through to the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in terms of the, they don't call them comics, do they? They had a specific name for them. They weren't annuals either. What do they used to call them?
They were cereals, weren't they? Did they call them cereals?
No, I should know this because I used to absolutely fucking love them. Oh my God, what did they call them? How can we fall at the first hurdle straight away?
Well, to be fair, it's us.
Albums. They called them albums. Albums, they called them. They were being published. Well, they're still being published today. Obviously, not by Goscinny and Uderzo anymore. By the way, listeners, I'm probably pronouncing those names wrong. I don't think I've ever actually heard them said out loud.
No, me either.
But I've always said Goscinny and Uderzo. So I guess, I don't know, right or wrong.
Apologies.
Yeah. If we're getting it wrong, by all means, let us know. I don't think I'm butchering that too badly. But obviously not written by those anymore. They are both still credited. But, you know, the annuals, as they were, are in the hands of different writers and artists now. But certainly at this time, you know, a lot of these films were being adapted from those albums, with the exception of 12 Tasks of Asterix, which was its own thing. It was a brand new screenplay written by the creators and then set to film. The others, you know, your Asterix and your Cleopatra, your Asterix in Britain, all of those that got adapted, they were straight from the albums, as they call them. So
I think it wasn't 12 Tasks. I think that was made into an album afterwards, wasn't that? I think it's the only one they reverse engineered.
Did they? I'm not sure.
Yeah. I'm not sure I read that this afternoon, but it's been a long day, so I might be wrong.
Quite possibly. I can only remember seeing 12 Tasks of Asterix. I can't remember ever reading it. I won't claim to have read all of them. I've certainly read a large chunk of them. I've got about 4 or 5 on the bookshelf behind me now still. That was all I actually owned. I got the rest out of libraries, because libraries were a thing. For our younger listeners, libraries are what we had before the internet, kids, where, you know, you couldn't just rip things off. So if you were poor, like us, and you couldn't afford to buy all the Asterix books, you went to your local library and you could borrow them for free. There was something about a library book as well, because those ones had the plasticky covers on them.
And yes.
They hit different. Anyway, we're not really talking about the albums. I'm sure we will, because this is kind of, it's inevitable. They go hand in hand. We're here to talk about these animated specials. Now, there are two of them freely available on Amazon for those of you in the UK. There are two on Prime. All of them, incidentally, are on Prime. It's just that they're only two for free. If you want the others, they are about £3. They're not even expensive. All the live action Asterix stuff is on there as well. I've only ever seen one of those.
I've not seen any of that.
I cannot in good conscience recommend them. Maybe they should appear on Better Than Mario.
Maybe.
Yeah. So yeah, I personally watched Asterix and Cleopatra and 12 Tasks of Asterix for this. Yeah. I know as of lunchtime, Mark, you'd watched Asterix and Cleopatra, and that was as far as you were going to go. So.
Yeah, so I did start watching 12 Tasks, and then I just didn't have time to get through it this afternoon. I had stuff on in work. But then watching it, I did remember quite a lot of it. So I was like, right, okay, I'll take what I can get. But my primary focus was Asterix and Cleopatra, because I didn't remember that one. And yeah, I found that one a bit of a slog, I've got to be honest. I was far more enjoying 12 Tasks, and I was glad I didn't get to finish it.
12 Tasks is definitely the better of those two. I remember really liking Asterix in Britain. I haven't rewatched it for this again, run out of time. I think I might do, because it's £3 a pop. In my opinion, these are worth it. So I think we might have a slight difference of opinion on the pod tonight.
I don't know, because I mean, I found Asterix and Cleopatra a slog, possibly because I haven't slept for about a week. I think I've slept, my average sleep's about 4 or 5 minutes per night at the moment. So I struggled to get through it. But when I was concentrating on it, and I wasn't trying to do other things as well, when I was concentrating, it was fine. And the gags were landing, and it felt very much like a comic strip. Mm-hmm. There was very much a setup and a gag all the way through. It just felt a bit disconnected, and in places it felt a bit slow. Whereas when I was watching 12 Tasks, I didn't get to finish it, annoyingly, but that felt more coherent. And I think because of that, I'll go back and look at the others again. Yeah. Just because I say it's been a long, long time since I've watched these with any sort of frequency or any sort of interest other than doing this show. And I don't want to tarnish the memory of that by thinking, I watched it today and it was shit. Because it wasn't shit, but part of what I watched was what I was relating that to anyway. So I want to give it another chance before I write it off.
Yeah, I mean, I'd recommend you give it another. I was quite surprised by your message, I'll be honest. Horses for courses. But I personally was very pleasantly surprised by these, because I was very worried they wouldn't be that good. Like I said, as a kid, I adored Asterix. Absolutely. Like, I had tons of merch. I watched all these films. I had Asterix and Cleopatra on video. I remember my nan bought me that from Woolworths. It came in a great big plastic clamshell, like a VHS would, with a blue cover. And Asterix and Cleopatra in this Egyptian font on the cover. And I swear I must have wore that thing out. 12 Tasks I watched all the time. It was on TV. So, you know, I had very fond memories of them. So it was one of those where I was like, oh, please, please don't be shit. Don't be shit. Now, look, they're not brilliant, certainly. But we have to bear in mind it was the late 60s. We have to bear in mind it was, a small French production. So initially it was, anyway. Yeah. It would come to be that Gaumont would buy them out. But initially everything was being done in the one production house. It was being done in, hold on, I've written this down, Dargaud Films. Probably butchered that as well, listeners. Don't speak French other than bonjour. And I only learned that from Beauty and the Beast. So fuck knows. So where was I? I went off on a tangent then about French. Production houses and things like that. And yeah. So I was worried. You can see that initially, the budget isn't there for it. Some of the animation is not great. A lot of the animation isn't great. But then also it is definitely, I think, of a feature quality. It's not television animation, but it's not good feature animation either.
It's in that sort of happy no man's land, really, whereby it's too good for TV, but it's probably just about passable for film.
Yeah, it reminded me of about the quality that you would get on some of the kind of the feature length Hanna-Barbera.
That's where I was going to go.
That you would get like in the late 70s and early 80s. It had that kind of feel for it. It's clearly reaching for Disney, very, like, it's wearing its influence on its sleeve. And it's, as it turns out, when you read into the history of this, Goscinny that's always wanted to do a kind of Walt Disney-esque animated feature anyway. So that's, these are wearing their heart on their sleeves. And I think, it doesn't fall too far short, other than the fact that clearly, the money wasn't necessarily there. I'd be interested, and I haven't looked into this, perhaps I should, I didn't have time, but maybe I will do this after the show. perhaps update you. I'd be interested to know what these returned on their initial investment, because it feels like they were huge. So it feels like, you know, they may have been relatively cheap to put together initially. And then, because they, like I said, they ran all the fucking time.
Yeah, like it they was, were always on.
They were always on, like, ITV and stuff like that. And I know in, you know, in other European countries, it was probably even bigger than it was in Britain. So I would imagine they made a lot of money off the back of it. But, you know, Asterix and Cleopatra especially, all the songs are in there as well. So they're clearly reaching for that kind of Disney animated feature. Yeah. And they, for an animated feature, they're pretty long as well. They're like 80-odd minutes, you know, so they...
Yeah, I think 12 Tasks is nearer 2 hours, isn't it? I think it's... I want to say it was about 100 minutes. I think it was a long...
That is really long, particularly, you know, when you look at these early Disney films they're trying to ape as well, you know, most of those are clocking in at like 60, 70 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't even the level that you get today where an animated feature now quite commonly is. Like,
apologies, it was 82 minutes. Sorry, I do apologize. Yeah. I must be watching something else.
That's still pretty long for an animated feature, particularly for a hand-drawn animated feature in the 60s. That is quite long.
Just on your earlier point, so at the box office, 12 Tasks sold 9.4 million tickets. So it doesn't have a box office figure, but it says how many tickets it sold. So 9.4 million people went to see 12 Tasks at the theatre. So again, this is 1970, what?
60-something.
Cleopatra was 68, I think. 12 Tasks was slightly later, possibly 76.
Oh, there you go.
Asterix and Cleopatra doesn't have a figure attached to it, fuck's sake. It's not comparable today, but you know, people won't go into the cinema. Cinemas weren't what they are today, and people won't go into the movies as much, certainly in Europe, in the late 60s and early 70s, because it wasn't a thing. It wasn't as much of a thing. So I think it's difficult to look at box office and take that as a measure of success. But I mean, as you said, these things were always fucking on. And there are bastard and loads of them. I hadn't realized quite how many there are. 18 films.
There you go. Now, does that include the live-action films?
Yes.
I was going to say, because that seems like quite a lot. I don't think there's that many animated films.
Only five live-actions. There's still 13 animated.
Yeah. Spanning...
On top of that, there are 15 board games, 40 video games, and one theme park.
Park Asterix... it's not too far from Disneyland Paris. It is on my bucket list. Never been, because I don't particularly like visiting France that much. Sorry if we've got any listeners.
It'd be fine if we went for all the French people
out there. It's just not. Look, I don't. Yeah, I'm not getting into that.
I made that joke once today already.
I've
been to France a couple of times, and it's all right. But there are places that go ahead of it, got to be honest.
That's the thing for me. And specifically, you know, if I'm going on a theme park vacay, like Disneyland Paris is fine and everything. But god damn, those French park goers are rude. Like, they're so fucking rude. They can't queue. They're smoking everywhere, even though there's no smoking signs. They're jumping barriers. Like, I'm sorry to it's not even a stereotype. Like, I've witnessed this several times firsthand. I have been to Disneyland Paris 4 times, I think, and it's the same every time. So I never quite get to go into Park Asterix, because that puts me off a little bit. But I will do, because I loved these things. Like I say, I know it would hit me right in the feels. So, the video games, you know, we're going off topic already, but we do talk about merch when we talk about these shows, so we may as well, since you've brought it up.
Yeah.
The video games I remember very fondly, particularly there was an arcade game, which was a Konami-style beat-em-up. And I think Konami did it, but it was that kind of... It was in the mold of Turtles and Simpsons and what have you. And then there was the Master System game, which I fucking adored. Absolutely adored. It was a side-scrolling platformer, as things tended to be in those days, but you could punch and stuff as well, or basically it depended on your character. Like, Asterix could punch and Obelix would do like the butt stomp, and you played as one or the other. And that, back in those days, was a pretty big fucking deal. Like, it wasn't like, here's a level of Asterix and here's a level of Obelix. Like, no, you pick, and the gameplay will change depending on who you're playing as. So I loved that Master System game. I also had a tabletop game. It was, I remember it came in a little like PVC pouch, and it was a red book, and it was sort of based loosely around Asterix at the Olympic Games.
Right.
And it was kind of like a choose your own adventure, but it came with dice. So it was sort of it was kind of a bit like if you get a solo D&D adventure now, like you can buy these PDFs online, and like you're still using dice to essentially do a choose your own adventure to see if you succeed or fail and get your scores and stuff like that. And so you had this set of dice, and they had a numerical dice, and then you had a dice that had like a magic potion on it, and it had dogmatics on it, and it had Caesar on it, and then that was like an outcome dice. And then you had a pad of paper that we used to keep track of like your health and how many potions you had left and stuff like that. And it was a single player game. You could play it on your own.
I didn't have the Asterix one, but I had quite a few of those. I've still got some of them here. I think I dug a couple of them out not so long ago.
Yeah.
Just because we had lockdown and shit and I was bored. But yeah, stuff like that. There was loads around, and that seemed to go through quite a lot of properties had that type of choose your own adventure game in the mid to late 80s and even the early 90s. So they were great. And so I didn't have the Astro. I remember a friend of mine had the Astro. I remember when he said about, I didn't remember until he said about the red book.
Yeah.
And it all came fucking flooding back to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I may have to try and dig it out and see if I can dig it out somewhere online and see if I can
it's bound to be on eBay. It's bound to be on eBay, isn't it?
It's whether it's not affordable on eBay is the thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you never know. But yeah, things do tend to go through the roof on eBay.
Especially when we want them.
Well, yeah. I mean, I haven't even bothered looking what an Asterix book is on eBay. I suppose they're probably quite cheap because they're still in print. So I guess these books were expensive back in the day. I remember like an Asterix book being like £6 or £7 when I was buying them back, which is why I haven't got many, because they were a birthday present or a Christmas present. Like, they weren't fucking cheap. But then also they were quite big, for a comic strip. It was, I guess these were my first graphic novels, really, the Asterix books.
Yeah.
That
would make sense.
My first graphic novel was actually an adaptation of Alien, which was a hand-me-down from my cousin. And my parents didn't realize what it was. My mother was thrilled when she actually had a flick through it. I think I was about 7. I've still got it. It's on the shelf behind me with the Asterix book. Incidentally, it's worth about £70 now as well, but I don't think I'll ever get rid of it.
I think I had Beano's and stuff. My first graphic novel, I think, was it was either a Temple of Doom or Last Crusade tie-in.
Right.
Somebody got it for me for a Christmas, and I had no fucking idea what it was. I didn't know they did comic books or films at that point.
I would have been about 6 or 7, to be fair.
Yeah, so. And I'd seen the film, so it was fine.
Yeah.
So that would have been one of my first ones. Completely off topic. The book on its own, you can get Asterix the Rescue Adventure Game Book for $3.49.
Oh, bargain!
But the vintage Asterix the Rescue Adventure Game Book set, with the figures and the other paraphernalia and shit you need, $49.99.
Yeah, that's more than I was expecting to pay for it. You've got to have it.
There's a 20 quid version as well. Yeah, exactly. There's a 20 quid version as well. So it's around.
It's around. Okay, fair enough. I wonder what an VHS goes for. I'm interested in that now as well, because I've still got a VHS player. But then it's free on Prime, but it's not the same.
It's not the same, is it?
It's not the same.
Funny enough, somebody tried to offload a load of VHS tapes onto me today, but I haven't got a player anymore, so I had to politely decline.
Yeah, I mean, VHS is difficult. I've looked after mine, and most of them have still gone mouldy. Like, keeping VHS in good nick, because it's tape, is really, really difficult. Yeah.
No, we had a boatload in my parents' house, but we got rid of them for that reason. We'd replaced most of them anyway with DVD or digital. Just when we opened the box, so you open it, it smells musty. You think, oh, fuck, I'm not going to bother.
Yeah,
because as soon as you put it in, your system's getting wet as well. And it's just like, it's
and the tape snaps and you get white mold all over it. You can't pay to get them clean, but it's very expensive. This is not interesting to anybody.
Sorry.
Swinging back around the topic. Yeah, so I watched Asterix and Cleopatra first. And then went on to 12 Tasks of Asterix, just because that was the one, Asterix and Cleopatra, because I remembered the video specifically. I was like, I'm going to dive into this one. Aside from the fact that, it looks, I mean, I say it looks cheap, you've got to bear in mind the age as well. You know, yeah. You'll bear in mind this was the early 60s, but yeah, it's not, it hasn't quite got the polish of like a Disney film or something like that.
It hasn't, but they do make a couple of jokes very early on about it as well. You know, the fact that the audio won't match the mouse and stuff like that. So they, you know, they make the joke about that early on. And I think there's a joke about colours in there at some point as well, but things not looking right or things not looking... There's something in there. I can't remember what it was now, but there's so much fourth wall shit in there. I've forgotten all about it. It's amazing.
Mental. They trample all over the fourth wall. I mean, so did the books as well, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
But they absolutely obliterate the fourth wall, which again, considering this is the late 60s, is pretty forward thinking. But I instantly remembered, like, as soon as that translator came up at the start and started clicking, and then you start to get the subtitles come up telling you that it's going to be out of sync and stuff, I remembered every fucking frame of it. It took me straight back. I'd seen it so many times. I was like, it's the clicking guy.
And when he's narrating the hieroglyphics, you know, the car comes up and he's making something brum brum noises, and thinking, I didn't remember this. I would have seen this one when I was younger. I didn't remember this one too. I remembered 12 Tasks. But when that came up, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this guy.
Yeah.
And then do you get the joke about things? No, things not lining up, others, so the mouth not matching and stuff like that. And you think, yeah. And I was straight into it. And I think the problem I had with it was that because I was in work and I've not slept a great deal, and I was watching it and I was trying to do too many things, and it just didn't.
Mm.
I found myself switching off from it because it wasn't engaging enough. And then when I was trying to come back in, I was finding it a bit, because I'd missed a bit of the setup, I was finding it quite dull.
Yeah.
And then I'd have 5 minutes and then something else, they'd start the next bit. And it very much felt like that sort of ongoing comic format whereby this would be the little quest in this issue, and this would be the little quest in this issue. And it felt very, very episodic in that way. So it was easy enough to get back into it. Mm. When I did come out of it, but then as I say, it's just one of those. It didn't really hit me, and I think that's probably more my issue than its issue.
I think maybe a little bit of both. I think, you know, that's not unfair in what you're saying. You are right. You know, it is quite procedural, I guess. But I think that's partly down to the fact that it is a very faithful adaptation, whereas with 12 Tasks, it was written specifically for the screen. Yeah. And you know, in 12 Tasks, it still has that kind of format because there are 12 tasks and they complete
there are 12
each
scenes.
One. You know, there are 12 segments. But Asterix and Cleopatra, very much feels like it rambles, I guess, slightly, which in long-form storytelling, like the graphic novel, is not a problem. But when I think specifically because with an animated feature, you're so conditioned to, like, you know, get in, tell a story, get out, because animation is expensive. And, you know, you're paying for every single thing you put on screen, that you're not used to seeing that much fat, I guess.
Yeah, and I think as well that at the time you had animated features, but I don't know, I've been racking my brain today trying to think of it. I don't know of that many truly faithful adaptations of comic books or comic strips where they'd actually taken that on. So I think that people would have looked at this and gone, oh, well, that's this one. And not thinking, actually, we want to tell we can tell the story of the overarching story without having all these little side bits and all the little gags and all the single bits we don't really need. And I think that's evolved over time. And I think that writers and producers of this type of film have got far more savvy over the years of doing this. But this would have been a very early example of doing that. And I think because of that as well, that I think I may be being slightly unfair on it because it does feel that very, it's very bit, but actually I don't think that's necessarily a problem, and I think people would have appreciated that because that's what they'd have been used to in reading it and seeing this properly. So they're seeing what they've read being brought to life, as opposed to a version of it where, oh, they missed that joke out, or they didn't do that bit, or they skipped through that bit.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting because, again, going back to Gosling and Dirt, was saying that they wanted to make a Walt Disney style animated film. And very much kind of trying to walk in the steps of Walt. What's interesting about that is the reason we know what that animated adaptation should look like, and to be honest, the reason why we know mostly what good storytelling looks like in film today in popular culture, is because Walt did blaze this trail. And if it didn't need to be on screen, if it served no purpose, it would not be there. Like I said, those early animated features, your Bambis, your Pinocchios, your Dumbos, they're like 60 minutes and change. Yeah. Like if he was brutal, absolutely brutal, in his storyboarding,
there's two parts to that, as you said, the fact that yes, he was very clinical and he was very, no, everything was very tight, but also shit's expensive. So if I haven't got to draw it, exactly. I'm not going to make it. If I don't need it, I'm not going to draw it. I'm not going to waste the time. I'm not going to waste the equipment. I'm not going to waste any of the resources for something I'm not going to put on screen that I don't need.
Exactly. But what that does lead to then is the Walt Disney interpretation of Bambi rather than a faithful adaption of Bambi or Pinocchio. Or, I mean, it's quite difficult when you're talking at fairy tales anyway, because they've been through so many iterations. But whereas this is very much sticking close to the text. And it just, I think it's a totally different approach is the problem. Yeah. And so it requires you as a viewer to just flick that switch and go with it and go, oh, well, actually, no, this is a completely different approach. This is a very faithful adaptation. That's not necessarily a good thing. I'm not defending it. I'm not saying that it wouldn't be better if actually we could shave 10 minutes off it. And it's just the approach that they took. In fact, you know, regular listeners to any of our other shows will know I will be the first one to say that is not the approach you should take, because it's not a comic book. It is an animated film. Yeah. And you need to understand that. But you could see they clearly, they learn from that with 12 Tasks of Asterix. It's very, it is just like a film. They understand how to tell a moving story by that point. I think the style is consistent throughout the films from what I've seen and what I remember, but I think the approach changes quite a lot. I think they managed to keep the spirit of Asterix there, and that fourth wall breaking and the humor, which is essential. Like the gags were funny to me as a kid. They're still funny to me now. Like I found both of them very, very funny. And when you consider these gags were written in the 60s, you know, looking back at it now and finding them funny as an adult, I'm surprised that I found them funny as a kid, because some of the gags are quite sophisticated. You know, I'm particularly thinking of things like in 12 Tasks, for instance, where one of the tasks is they've got to go and get Form 87B or whatever it is.
Yeah, go and get a permit.
Yeah, and they get tied up in bureaucracy. Now, as a kid, I don't know how I managed to wrap my head around that, but obviously I did. But it's, you know, it's very, very funny the way they use in this historical context to pass comment on, you know, contemporary culture. And it's still, you know, they're taking swipes at elements of contemporary culture that are evergreen as such. Like, you know, unless we have complete anarchy, we're always going to be suffering through bureaucracy like that.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, so all of these tasks that we get, you know, the riddles and stuff like that, they're things that will be ever present, so they managed to keep it fresh. Likewise with Asterix and Cleopatra, you know, it's all about that. It's almost that Flintstones-esque kind of, this is the Egyptian version of a modern day thing, like you said about the subtitles with the car, for instance.
Yeah, you know, and like where you've got he tries to I can't remember what the character's name, he tries to unionize all the workers to stop to get them to come out on strike so that they don't finish the pyramid on time and all that sort of stuff. And it's there was a lot of them. As I say, it's that social commentary which you don't expect. And as a kid, I'd have seen that and gone, yeah, all right, okay, fine. But the fact they ignore him and they just carry on, that's the funny bit, because he's telling them to do all this stuff and they just ignore him and carry on eating their lunch or whatever it is. So that's that side of the humour. You're completely, as a kid, you're completely missing the point. But it's the same with also the innuendos and the double entendres and stuff in Pixar and DreamWorks. As a kid, you don't notice them. As an adult, you're thinking, really? Did I just hear that? Yeah. And it just works. And I think they were some of the better parts of what I was watching when I was watching today. Just the fact that you think, look at this again, I wouldn't have got that as a child, but I remember this bit. I remember that gag, but I don't remember the bits leading up to it.
Yeah.
And so coming back to it now, I'm thinking, actually, yeah, that really works. And I hadn't realized until today that the form they make, because they have to go and get a form filled in and they end up confusing them into signing a non-existent form or something, don't they? But that the form they make up to get them to issue them, it's then reused. I think it's in Witcher 3, where he has to go off and get, it's some sort of, it's permission to do some part of a quest. I can't remember the exact details, but I remember that it's the same form number they use in that.
Amazing.
And it's just a completely pointless callback.
Amazing.
But yeah, it just kind of says, I love that. I have to look it up now.
I love that.
It's that type of thing. And you think, actually, no, that means nothing. And to a million people watching this, no, playing that game, they'll go, that's fucking stupid. Why have we done that?
But it does show, like, the impact that these films had. You know, they weren't just a bunch of throwaway animated movies. Like, they've transcended. You know, I think for our generation, especially when they were being run on TV, you know, it's stuck with us. And that humor, I think, whilst as a kid I may not have got the jokes, I think I would have been attuned to the style, is the thing. You know, like that kind of, it's quite surreal with the fourth wall breaking. It's quite sophisticated. It's quite surreal. And I think I would have tuned in to the style. It gets Python-esque in places sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think I probably would, because I was so tuned into the style, I was just conditioned to know when things were funny. Even if I didn't understand why they were funny, if that makes sense, I could understand that was a joke.
You could always work at that. That was the payoff. Yeah. That's the setup. That's the payoff.
And that was a joke. I mean, there's even things like, and obviously this is broader ranging than just these two films, and how I have never put this together until we rewatched them this time, bearing in mind I've still got the books and still read them, how I never put together that the druid is called Getafix is beyond me. But when I first heard it spoken out loud this time in Asterix and Cleopatra, I was like, well, of course he is.
And there are so many pun names. It's amazing.
Cacophonics, like, you know, there's lots,
like, even dogmatics and stuff like that. It's just dumb. There's so many of them. And I was trying to pick them up as I was going through, and I did make a list, and I've left it on my desk annoyingly. So when the cleaners go in tonight, they'll be wondering what the fuck I've been doing all day, because there's no work on my desk. There's a list of fucking Asterix character names.
Hey, it could be worse. You could have been watching something for Better Than Mario and left something really untoward on your desk. So,
well, this is true.
At least it's just Asterix characters.
Yeah. But yeah, like the two architects, no, they had, Artifice and Edifice. I can't remember what it was now. There's another druid called Panoramix.
Yeah,
and it's a lot cleverer than you ever. It's really funny, but it's a lot cleverer than you probably gets credit for as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in places as well, it's actually quite subversive. Like you mentioned, the DreamWorks and of it all, like. It does tap into that level of subversive humor as well. There are points of it where you're going, that was, for a kid's film, that was a push. Like, there's a few of them in there as well. It would be remiss of us, I think, not to talk about some of the more negative cultural aspects, but they are... I mean, we always draw attention to it on this show, but the depiction of... You know, Egyptians in particular is not great. Some of the pirate savages as well, not great. But again, you have to look at the source material, and this was the 60s.
I was going to say, you kind of have to, and not excusing at all, as we always say, but you've got to take it where it comes from. And, you know, the sort, it's a very faithful adaptation of a very specific source material that was written in the 1960s. And it's, you know, we are a long way removed from the 1960s. Mm. You know, our society has changed massively, mostly for the better, but also, you know, see what's happened in this country the last couple of weeks, and we're all just a bunch of fucking idiots, apparently. But, you know, you meet it at its level, and you think, well, actually, the depictions aren't great by today's standards. At the time, there wouldn't have been the clamor to say, you can't do this, or you shouldn't have done that. They're not great representations of Egyptians or pirates, wherever pirates come from. In modern contexts, it's Somalia and East Africa, but...
They are Somali pirates.
Right.
But they've got fucking bones through their noses, Mark.
Well, yeah. I mean...
Like, that's...
Yes. Yeah. But I think as well, I mean, coming back to what I was just saying, you look at the source material and you look at the way that pirates were being portrayed on screen at the time, that's what you got. And live action pirate films and stuff like that, they were all depicted as savages, and then you had your swashbuckling heroes who'd go in and defeat them. So this is, no, it's playing off what's already in popular culture, and I think that that's the important bit to remember there, is that we are 60 years removed, and it's an entirely different time, and no, it's not great, but that's what people were used to seeing, that's what people would have expected to see. If you put, if you had people on a ship who were dressed more conventionally and didn't have the big earrings and the cutlasses and the bones through their nose, people wouldn't necessarily equate that with being pirates unless they were told they were pirates.
Yeah.
So it's just dragging that through, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And like I say, it just, you know, I always like to call this stuff out. I think you just acknowledge it and live with it and move on.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is. You take it in context of the time. It's just worth drawing attention to, I think. You know, you can't see this stuff and not recognize that it's wrong.
No, and I think the fact that, if you do see it and don't recognize it, then that's a far bigger problem for you now than it would have been for anybody then.
Yes.
But no, in recognizing it, you think, well, yeah, okay, it is what it is, that's fine, I'll move on. Mm. Whereas if you watch it going, yeah, what's wrong with that? They're all from Bongo Bongo Land and they all know they're all savages and whatever it's going to be. That's a quote from our former Prime Minister, by the way, that's not me. But, you know, that's... If that is your level of thinking and you are burning down fucking libraries in York at the moment, then that it's not going to offend you anyway, because that's just how your brain perceives these things.
Don't burn down the libraries, incidentally, people. Like I said, there's not many of the fucking things left to start with. So
there's a certain group of people who used to like burning books. We don't want them back.
Yeah, we don't want them back. Definitely not. So yeah, those depictions are not great, but other than that, I think it stands the test of time very well. Like I said, I think the humor holds up. I think the animation is fine. It's just that it's not, because it's a feature, you just expect it to have a little more polish, I think.
Yes.
Like I said, it's better than TV animation, but it's not up to like that Disney standard. It falls somewhere in that Hanna-Barbera, Flintstones Meet the Jetsons animated special level of...
Yeah, it's clean, it's fine, it's functional, it's just not, as I say, it's not polished.
Yeah, likewise, the songs, they're good, they're fine, they're not winning any awards. But then you have to bear in mind with the songs as well, obviously there's the element of translation with the lyrics, which, you know, that could affect things. And I do think that affects the voice acting in places as well, Look, it's animated, so it's always going to be easier to dub than a live action. But as we've said, several times on the other show, whenever something is dubbed rather than subtitled, you always lose an element of performance. Asterix's voice has always annoyed me in Asterix and Cleopatra. I don't know why.
I don't know why.
No,
can't put my finger on it.
Because I understand the choice, because he's small. So I understand what's happening. I understand that he's got like a squeaky voice and stuff. And I can understand how, looking at a drawing of that character, you'd be like, yeah, he's quite high pitched.
Yeah.
But it just never sounds quite right to me. Whereas in 12 Tasks, he sounds just like a regular guy. He sounds very British, but he just sounds like a regular guy. And that just sounds better to me for some reason.
Yeah, I couldn't put my finger on it, because I was watching it earlier on. And I couldn't put my finger on what it was that bugged me about the voice. And I still can't. I still couldn't tell you now. It just didn't feel... I just didn't feel right.
It's too high-pitched. It sounds like he's on helium.
Yeah. As you said, there's a very definite choice there. And I sat there going, why does he sound like that?
It's not right, is it?
It's not right, but it wasn't bad enough for me to go, oh, no, fuck this, I'm not going to do this. It was fine. It's same as most things. Once you turn into it, it stops being a problem. It's just that first couple of minutes, the first couple of introductions to it, and we're like, oh, yeah, he sounds like that. Fuck.
Yeah. It's not how you envision a great Gallic warrior to sound. It's always struck me as off, even as a kid. Because I think it was Asterix and Cleopatra was the first one I ever watched as well, having read the books, and then hearing him speak, I was like, he doesn't sound like that. Because I've got a voice in my head from reading the books, and I'm like,
he
doesn't sound like that. That's not right. And I've never been able to make that connection ever since. But it just in general, I think, the performances are not good, I'll be honest. In my opinion, they are not good. Now, whether that's a translation thing, whether that's a monetary thing, I don't know.
But
I mean, none of the performances are particularly good.
In my head, I put it. I sort of clocked performance. Thought again. Part of me is thinking they're not up here. They're not Disney level. They're not sort of top tier.
Mm.
But they're not the most egregious things I've ever seen. They're not the worst performances I've ever seen.
Oh no,
they're not great. But I think in my head, I put it down to the fact that it's not Disney, and there's a translation aspect to it. I know there were different actors who did the voices in French and English, and I appreciate that. But that, as I said, the literal translation of the text, there's always going to be nuance that's lost. Mm. And obviously, when you translate the way that you say particular phrases in one language will be the same as the other. So all that type of stuff. I think that's kind of where I put it down to, is like, well, if the source material has been translated, depending how good the translation was, then you might lose something in that. So I wasn't overly concerned about the performances. I didn't think they were great, but I wasn't watching sitting there again. Well, same as with Astro's voice. I wasn't sitting there going, "Fucking hell, that's dire."
Yeah, same. It wasn't enough to turn me off or anything, but I don't think the performances are good. Interestingly, you know, you mentioned different voices for the French and the dubs. Of course, there are, but in the native French language versions, the same guy played Asterix in pretty much all of those early features. Like, that was Asterix's voice. Yeah. Whereas here, it's a different guy every time. Like, every film's got a different cast. Now, I don't know if that's because, I don't know, maybe this is an industry thing, and I'm not 100% sure how it works with voice acting, and certainly not then, before people would have been unionized and everything. But I'm wondering whether it's just a case of, like, well, who's available and cheap?
Yeah, get somebody in.
Yeah, you're in on a day rate, and just read these fucking lines, please.
Yeah, I mean, no, I know that. There will be particular actors who do particular actors. So, no, Tom Cruise has a French voice, and Tom Hanks has a French voice. And when you go to stuff like The Simpsons, they have a voice cast the same as in English. It's just so, like, now that's a thing. Whereas in the 60s, I can't see that being an issue, which would be, look, who's around who speaks English?
Yeah.
Whose English is good enough? No, not just to pass, but to actually do a performance in English. Let's go with that, because we need somebody who's going to be coherent so we can sell to a wider market, because the entire world doesn't speak French.
Yeah.
So I think there were quite a few different voices used for the English. But yeah, the French one, I think, I want to say he did certainly the vast majority, if not all the animated ones.
Yeah, he definitely did. He was the voice of Asterix. So, yeah, you know, we didn't have that connection, which is why, like, the high-pitched one sounds particularly egregious next to the one from 12 Tasks of Asterix, where you just think, like, this sounds a lot more. It just fits. It just fits a lot better. But, yeah, in general, I think they're both fucking great. They're much better than I was hoping they would be, because I did generally worry. I really enjoyed watching both of them, to the point where I kind of do, as I say, want to go and spend a couple of quid and watch some of the others, because I think they've earned it. I think I'll get enjoyment out of them, because ultimately, like, the storytelling, it's particularly with Asterix and Cleopatra, it feels long-winded for an animated feature. I get that, but the story is still good, because the story is still the story of Asterix and Cleopatra. It's still funny. It still makes sense. Like, so
it's just the extra presentation, isn't it? And I think that, for me, for my money, had I only watched Asterix and Cleopatra, so I'd have come away going, right, well, that's that done.
Hmm.
I don't need to see any more. Having then started 12 Tasks, not getting, I don't think I got to halfway, but I was certainly into it. Having seen that, I'm thinking, right, okay, well, I'll certainly watch the end of that, and then I'll probably go back to pick up one or two of the others as well and see how I get on with those. I will probably go back and give Asterix and Cleopatra another chance as well, because I can see where there was merit in it. And I think that, as I said earlier, I think it was more my issues coming into it today and not having given myself a great deal of time to do it anyway. I think there's probably more of an issue in that than it was in the content. We've talked about some of the issues with it, but I think that's something I'll come back to later on and say, actually, I'll give it a go. Realistically, if there's a set, I'll probably pick up a set, because it's fucking easier.
I'd drop 20, 30 quid on a box set of all of these easily.
I'm thinking
with the kid as well, if she gets a bit older.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Books here for her as well. So I will.
I mean, Yeah, number one wouldn't watch it, but number two probably would.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It always strikes me as a bit odd, Asterix, because like, I got into it because when I was very young when I first got into Asterix. I think I was probably like just reading Bailey. I was probably like 5 or 6. I lived next door to a church, and as a result, the vicarage opposite, the vicar's son was exactly the same age as me. So we were besties growing up because we lived opposite each other. So we'd be around each other's house playing and stuff like that. Now, yeah, I used the vicar's son, but the house wasn't, you know, overly churchy. But by the same token, this motherfucker wasn't reading the Alien graphic novel, right? That wasn't a thing that was going to happen. Nor was he reading the Beano and the Dandy. So it was, you know, what I'm saying is, they weren't exactly Puritan, but there was, you know, you weren't reading anything. But he had a load of fucking Asterix books, because I guess there is at least some educational value in them, right?
Yeah.
Particularly in a very Christian household, because the Romans are the fucking bad guys, you know, and there's a lot to be gained from it. And you've obviously got all the stuff with the Greek gods and stuff as well. So I think there was value. So anyway, I'm around his house one day, and we're looking at comics, right? And I've got my Beano and my Dandy, and he thinks it's fucking amazing because he's not reading the Beano Dandy, and then he's got these Asterix books. So I start reading those, and I was like, these are really fucking good. Like, they're really, really fucking good. But I think maybe that wasn't unique to us then, is what I'm trying to say. So it was always kind of, it felt to me like this was always very, very popular, but it was always kind of on the fringe. Like, not everybody was into Asterix. You know, it was just something that it was one of those things where if you were into it, you were really into it, I think. Like, you really got it, you know, especially because the humor was so off the wall as well, with the fourth wall breaking and stuff. So it doesn't break through in the way that, you know, a fucking Marvel animated feature would have, or you know what I'm saying? So there was a point to all that when I started. You set me off down memory lane somewhere, and I can't remember what it was. We were talking about the kids watch them. Oh, you were talking about number two might watch it, but number one won't. Like, well, I don't think you can ever really tell. Like, I don't think you can tell who's going to connect with it until you put it in front of them, because it's such a particular style, because it is partly, like, it's not majorly historically accurate, but there are definite, like, they've paid care and attention to history is the best way to put it, I think. Like, they've taken liberties, but it's all set in a relatively accurate historical context. And sometimes they go a little bit overboard, but there is some detail in there that you're like, well, I don't know if I, like, this sounds a little bit like learning. I don't know if I want to do this. Like, you know, and I was fine with it as a kid, and I'm fine with it now, but it's not for everybody. You know, it's not just bashing Romans, is what I'm saying, I think.
That's what Life of Brian is for.
Exactly. It's kind
that's
of like
that's where this leads, isn't it? This is like the entry
really
level.
It does. Well, when I said it was Python-esque, you know, there is a direct line from A to B.
Oh God, yeah.
You know, if you look at it, like, it, I think that's a good way of putting it. This is the entry level. This is
even if you look at the evolution, the evolution where you have the character names, the pun names. That's where you go from. That's where you go from Get a Fix to Silius Otis and Big Stickers.
Mm. Oh, totally.
That's how this carries through. And yeah, it's very much. I mean, from my perspective, looking with the kids, number one won't watch it because if I tell her it's good, she will automatically rebel against it. If I tell her it's shit, she will.
Boring.
If I tell her it's shit, she'll take me at my word. If I tell her it's good, she'll then think I'm lying.
Damned if you do, damned if you don't. Yeah.
Kids. Whereas number two, well, I'll put it on, and he might sit there with his Beano or whatever else, and he'll just be watching it over the top of it while he's doing something else. And then at some point, he will put it down and he will focus on it.
Yeah.
That's just the way he is. If there's a screen on, he's, you know, just out of the corner of his eye, and it gets more and more pronounced. I think that if the two of them were to sit down and look at it, I think they would get different things out of it. And you're talking about how, you know, you've watched it as an adult and as a kid, and I said the same thing. That I think that if number one watched it, even there's less than a year between them, she'd be looking at it, and she'd be looking for the more subtle, more nuanced, the cleverer, where he's looking for dick and fart jokes.
Yeah.
And there's something for both of them in there.
I was going to say, it's got it all. It covers both of those bases.
Yeah. It's just whether I can get them both to sit down, yeah. A, in the same room, B, at the same time.
Yeah. And see, not kill each other thing. While they're doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. All of a sudden, they would be nice to each other today, which is really fucking unnerving.
Jesus.
I know. So yeah. They're up to something.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like I said, it does cover all bases.
Yeah.
But I think you've got to get people to break through. Because there are so many hurdles to access in this, right? That I think unless yeah. you're a very young child, like I was when you're exposed to it, I think as you get older, those hurdles will tend to, like, to start with, it's French, right?
It's foreign, it's old, it's learning.
Yeah, all of these things, right? Yeah,
but they're all off-putting before you start. But it's only once you actually look at it.
Yeah. If you get through that, there is bashing Romans if you want an action cartoon. There is, you know, sophisticated humor if you're older. There is dick and fart yeah. jokes if you don't want that. There's songs. There's, yeah. you know, it's all there. And it's all good family fun. Like, it all comes yeah. down on the right side of that. Like, it can be subversive at times, but it never pushes the boat too far. It's all good, clean family fun. But you've got to break through the kind of slightly European, slightly educational,
yeah.
slightly antiquated kind of, you've got to break through all of that. I mean, I'd be interested to see, there was one came out just last year. There was a new Asterix book come yeah. out just last year. Be interested to see what it reads like today, whether that style has been updated.
Yeah, I'd quite like to look at that. The other thing I'm quite interested in, they announced there was going to be a Netflix series. It was originally slated for last year, but it's been put back to 2025 now. But again, I'd be interested to see how they've done that and how much of that original feel they've managed to retain.
Is that going to be like the CGI cartoon that they did not? Yeah, yeah. Because I haven't seen that either, but it did pique yeah. my interest because I actually thought yeah. the models looked quite good.
They've done a few bits the last couple of years. There was something in 2018. There were some sort of relatively short things put together between 2018 and 2021, and then so this Netflix series, which was due out last year, which has been delayed now. And so yeah, I'm quite keen to see where they've gone with that and how and what and obviously you know, it's going to be new content, but how faithfully they've kept they've retained the voice and how faithfully they've kept the style and the humor and things. I'm really not worried, but seeing some of the things on Netflix do update and sort of some of the older stuff they've brought forward, I'm nervous. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and it is a difficult one to get right. Like I said, those live action films, bless them, yeah. they tried to be really faithful.
Oh yeah, they tried, and there were quite a few of them as well.
I mean, it doesn't translate. Maybe it translates in France, but
maybe
looking at it. You know, looking at it over here, it just looks stupid. It's so silly. It's so yeah. so Euro trash. But you know, maybe Netflix can pull it out of the bag. I don't know. They're hardy, these goals. You know, this for us, we're talking about something that was, you know, with like this first special we're looking at, Asterix and Cleopatra, was the late 60s.
Yeah.
And now here we are, what, 80 odd years later, then talking about a Netflix special, like,
yeah,
you know, is that right? My maths is shit.
60-ish.
Yeah, 60-ish. There you go. My maths is fucking awful. So
mine is awful as well. But I
Cause it, what yeah. a fucking idiot. 60 to 120. What a fucking idiot I am. You see, this is why I was good with reading, not good with counting. There's not enough maths in same. Asterix, is there? Otherwise, I'd be fine.
Yeah, same.
Not like I need to do rather complex rather equations in my day job now, otherwise people die or anything, is it? You know, never mind.
That's what spreadsheets are for. They do it all for you.
Yeah, I haven't got a spreadsheet. I've just got my brain and some paper and a calculator if I remember it. Oops. Anyway.
Oh, well.
So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it's not for everybody. It's definitely not for everybody. I don't think it's something you have to have nostalgia for to appreciate. I think it's just got a very high price of entry. You know, not in terms of the fact you're like I say, these are fucking free, just in terms of your time and if you don't know what it is, whether you can actually stick with it for long enough. I think that price of entry is high for people. So if you've got nostalgia for it, these are fucking free. Go and watch them because they are good. If you haven't, I think I'd encourage anyone to give it a go. I really would.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, there's way worse animated features out there.
Fuck yeah. Just from my experience of it today, I've not had the best of times with it, but no, I'm going to persevere with it. Hmm. But at the same time, I wouldn't say, oh yeah, don't bother with that, it's shit. No, it's not one of these, like, no, when we pick up stuff on Mario, we're watching it so you don't have to. It's never going to be that.
No.
Because, it may be that it doesn't tick your boxes, and then maybe you go, yeah, no, you know what, I'm half an hour in, it's not really doing anything for me, I'm going to knock it on yet. Fine, and that's going to happen. You're going to have that sometimes. You said that depends on where you're coming at it from. But yeah, I would certainly say go and give a look. I'd say to anybody, give it a chance.
Yeah, give it a look. In like, if you're not enjoying it in like half hour or so, just bomb it off. Fine.
Yeah, exactly. But if you are able to do that, I can't. Once I've started, I can't not finish.
Yeah, I'm the same. Like, I've still never officially tapped out on Better Than Mario, even. Like, I've come very fucking close, but I
fell asleep once.
Yeah, I did fall asleep, whether that counts. But it's, yeah, if I start it, I've got to fucking finish it. Like, yeah.
I've got like box sets of TV shows I've bought, and I've watched the first couple and gone, well, this is shit. But then I've still got 18 episodes to watch because I can't not finish the fucking run. If I just get to the end of that season, that's
the
acceptable.
Same. I was just about to say, I'm the same. I'll see a season out once I've started it. But yeah. So, but yeah, if you're the type of person going to do that, it's fucking free. So stream it for 30, 40 minutes. See what you think. If you don't like it, bomb it off. But if you loved Asterix as a kid, they're great. They're great if you've got the connection to the source material, I think.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I don't have too much more to say about it. We haven't got like a run of 20 odd episodes to talk about. We've got like, we've watched two films out of how many did you say?
18. 18. Well, 13 animated and does another 5, which we can ignore.
I will watch more, definitely.
Same.
It's wet my whistle enough now. Well, and if that box set is out there anyway, yeah, I think I would spring for it. So maybe I don't think there is one, but maybe I'll do a bit of Googling.
I've not seen one, but if there is, maybe I'll give it a look. But I'm just saying, I've not really got too much else to say, but I've had a mixed bag with it today. And I can't say I've enjoyed every minute of it because I didn't. I'm quite upfront about that. But I think that's more me than it. I'm quite happy to go back to it. As always, I'd love to know what people's thoughts are, what people's recollections are. I remember this being fucking huge when I was about 7 or 8. It had that sort of renaissance where these fucking things were everywhere, and you couldn't escape it. And it's another, we said about not everybody had access to them and stuff. The school I went to, not every fucker could read. There was definitely a sort of an entry requirement there, which a lot of people were precluded from, apart from the fact that these films existed. But every fucker knew what was going on. Everybody knew them. So that spoke volumes as well. But yeah, so I'd love to know what people's recollections of this are. I know I had lunch with a friend today, and she was saying that she grew up in Germany, and they used to get it there. And she still, when she sees them, she'll occasionally pick stuff up. Now, when new stuff comes out, she'll go looking for it.
It was huge in Germany. I remember it being a big thing in Germany. Asterix.
So I mean, she was very excited that we were even talking about it. So I mean, that, no, again, and this woman's in her 50s, but this is something that they always did, and like, even in her 50s now, she still goes looking for shit when it comes out because she's a nerd like us. Please get in touch, let us know what your thoughts are, especially any sort of fond recollections, because it's part of the joy of getting feedback on the show is people going, oh, I remember that. I remember this episode. I remember when this happened. And it's just just having that conversation and getting to interact with people. So please, by all means, via the usual channels, on Twitter at SMPDpod, go to our website, ddpodcast.net, where you can leave us a message, or you can pick up our other shows and other episodes of this show. Really get your podcast from. Subscribe, leave a message. We'll be back to as best we can. Until next time.
Bye, Tutatis. We'll see you later.